Welcome to another episode of Before You Pop Off with me, your host, Sade Michelle. So today we're going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart. Fun fact, if you didn't know, I used to be a local news reporter. That's right, every single day I had to do my own hair and makeup, if you didn't know, and I was on TV just about every day of the week. Now, here's something that you probably didn't know. Being Black in the newsroom has its own challenges. I remember when I went to the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Arizona State University, we talked about not becoming the story as a reporter. Well, of course, since I've graduated, things have definitely changed and evolved in the newsroom. And when the murders of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd happened, all of a sudden, newsrooms were asking their Black reporters to talk about their experience as a Black person in America. But not many talked about their experience as a Black person in the newsroom. So I wanted to bring that conversation to you today. And I invited my friend Jarvis Robertson, who I've known for a while, and his coworker and my new friend, Amber Worthy. And we talked about it, what it meant to be a Black person in the newsroom and what's the current state of it, the future, and our predictions moving forward. I hope you guys learned something and enjoy this episode because we certainly did enjoy recording it. So let's just kind of like get into it. When you guys, and I'm gonna start with Amber, when you first decided to become a reporter and stuff like that, what did you think before you became a reporter? What your experience was going to be like as a Black person?
I went in real naive though. So I didn't have any expectations. I expected it to be the world that my mom painted as this world of like rainbows and acceptance and all this great stuff. And it was not that. So I had to fight to get my first job. And it, I explained to anyone is that you're just fighting for someone to give you a chance. Because it's not, I mean, I had what everyone else had, but I just had to find that news director that wanted me. And sadly, like in the South, it sometimes comes down to your skin color. And I love my first news director. He was amazing. He didn't care about my weight. He didn't care about my skin color. He didn't care about my Southern twang that I had to work to get rid of. He just said, I see something. Just, I want to give you that chance. So I went in naive and it slapped me in the face that not everybody was gonna like me. Even friends that knew what I was about to go do. So it just, I learned late in life that I wish someone would have told me a lot more so.
When you say friends, are you saying like, because I know I had an aunt who straight up like told me one day that I was working for the man and that we were just out to attack Black people. So are you talking about like friends like that or?
Essentially, well, some were like that. Some were like, why do you want to go do that? Like your schedule isn't dependent on you. It's based on them. And I'm like, there are a lot of jobs that are like mine that are demanding in the beginning. So like, why can't you see what I do as the same as your job? And I know I'm covering out on stories, people are very particular about my network affiliation because they think that weighs something. It doesn't. And like it decides what channel we air on, but it's not, it doesn't matter that much. And but a lot of people think they see that first. And I'm like, no, I'm just a girl trying to tell some stories. Just do this interview. And I get it. You're mad because I'm Black and I'm trying to talk about your Black uncle who went to jail. I'm sorry, but I do that for white people too. I do that for Hispanics too. Like, we don't discriminate. If you right. do something wrong and police want to get the word out, we don't tell. You know? Like, it just, it's a, I don't know. That's a losing battle with some people. They won't, they'll never understand.
Right. And I mean, you mentioned affiliate, so I'm gonna tease Jarvis, like what I used to call you guys, because Jarvis and I used to work in the Benny, Albany, Georgia, and he worked for Fox 31. So my crew from Fox, I used to be like Fox and Friends, because they were all black except for one. And I had to use that. I was like, these are my Fox and Friends. So Fox and Friends, when you, you know, transitioned into the Benny working for Fox 31, I mean, what were your thoughts as a black journalist going in? What was the idea for you?
I was definitely naive as well. I did not know what it was going to take to be a reporter, honestly. I graduated December 2013, didn't start working until November 2014, so almost a year. So I was very wet, very green. I will never forget my first assignment that I had to go shoot. There was a press conference being held in Valdosta, over an hour away from Albany, about Kendrick Johnson. Essentially every news outlet from the state of Georgia was there. And there's this new kid there who just completely botched the assignment. That was a learning experience for me. I'm pretty sure my news director wanted to fire me. She was so mad at me, sending emails back and forth. And my first news director, the way she worked, when she needed to address something, she liked to do it in one email to multiple people. So I was embarrassed. I wanted to cry that day because I honestly thought that I was going to get fired. So going into Albany, I was very naive. I did not know the work that it was going to take. I had to quickly learn how to be a reporter, but it was a good learning experience, something I certainly won't take for granted and I'll never forget.
Right. And it's funny you say Valdosta and Kendrick Johnson, because I remember, so I went to, you know, Cronkite School of Journalism back in Arizona State. Shout out to Arizona State. Jarvis knows I love my school. I'm not loyal to the sports, but I'm loyal to the Cronkite School. But, you know, Kendrick Johnson was a big story in Albany. There was also, I don't know if you remember, Jarvis, that guy who was a part of the new Black Panther Party, and he had stomped on the American flag, and there was that.
Yeah. I went to Valdosta State, so I watched all of that play out.
Right.
So that was a strange time. It was
a crazy time when we were down there in Albany, and I'm in my head thinking like, okay, I'm a black journalist. They taught me at the Cronkite School the code of ethics, and I matter. And so when I get in this newsroom, if there is something going on in the black community, I need to speak out, and we got to correct it and make sure it's right. So that was the big story that was going on when I started. And so I noticed they kept on putting Black Panther Party, and I'm like, no. My aunt was a Black Panther, and she and all her friends will tell you that they have denounced them. Those are two different organizations. You guys need to put new in there. I emailed that to my news director. She was just like, okay, well, I'll think about it. And I was like, And then finally I got tired, went up to the web producer, and I was like, you need to put new in there because they're like a different organization. And he was like, they're both terrorist organizations. And I was like, and that was my reality check of working in news as a black person. Jarvis, go ahead. I see you making that face.
I completely understand what you're saying. I think for us down the street, because literally our stations were like on the same street.
Literally.
Just walk away from each other on the same street. I think for us at Fox, we leaned on each other a lot because it was a lot of black people in that news. And so we were able to understand each other, adapt, and figure out how we provide coverage and keep them. So I will say for me in Albany, having all the black, other black reporters was just amazing. And all the Black people that work behind the scenes, like, you would have thought that they specifically wanted to hire only Black people at that station.
I was jealous. I was jealous. And you guys, more than one of you guys, worked on the same shift together. And one of you wasn't doing sports and the other. No, it was like multiple doing news.
Oh, wow.
Unlike us.
Okay, so now, like, but what's so crazy is I had a different experience with the Kendrick Johnson thing is because that was when I learned that I had to be impartial, like, as a journalist, because my mentor saw me tweeting about it, and she texted me and said, you need to delete those tweets, because when you get your first job, you want your boss to trust you to cover the next Kendrick. And I was like, you right. You real right. So I deleted my whole account, because that whole story was so wrong on so many levels. Okay. And I was in class when they found his body, and all of us were just shook. Like, as budding journalists, there's a story breaking right down the street.
Right.
I just drove down the street just so I could be there, you know, like, for the press conferences and all that kind of stuff. Because it just was, that was my introduction to unbiased journalism, even when things really suck. You know, like,
let's talk about that real quick, though. Unbiased journalism, because I think that's the biggest thing that people don't understand is, like, sometimes I'll go to a story and I'll say, so why are you protesting? Like, what are you protesting for? Just to get it out of them. And they'll be like, well, you know why. And it's just like, throw me a bone here.
Yeah, please. Like, when I have to beg for you to tell me why, like, that's the story. Tell me why. Remind the viewers why you're here. But it's hard sometimes when they just expect people to understand. And it's like, no, we've been fighting this for a very long time, and we're going to keep fighting it. So just be ready to reiterate why you're here.
Same exact experience, especially with the George Floyd situation last year. There was one in particular out in Spartanburg, which is, like, not too far from Brickell. And college students, they drove down from some school in North Carolina, which is just right there over the state line. And I said, talk to me about your protest. Tell me why you're protesting. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I was like, okay, but, like, I need you to explain to me. Like, I can't put my personal opinion in this story. Like, I got to pull it out of you. And I'm just standing there like, okay, how can I ask a question that's not going to be just a yes or no, and make this person understand that, one, you need to know why you're out here, but two, you're just out here to hold up traffic. You look kind of crazy. So, like, work with me. I'm working with you. I need you to work with me. We got to get this thing together.
Because if we just covered it like y'all just are blocking traffic, you'd be like, why did you say that? And I'm like, you didn't tell me why you were here.
Right.
Like, I'm literally just presenting whatever you give me.
Right.
You give me good sound, I'm going to have great sound. You give me nothing,
I got to make something out of that. Right. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing a lot of people don't understand is, like, I got to make something out of it that day. They're like, oh, I'll talk to you later in the next day. No, 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 no. It's that day. That day. Are we going to do the dance together? That day.
I hate that question when it's like, when is it air? In 2 hours.
Oh, can I do it over? No.
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 It already aired.
Because I got to get back to the newsroom. But we're kind of touching on this, like, life before the summer to 2020. But I mean, you have mentioned Twitter. Do either of you ever think before summer 2020 that you would have ever tweeted anything like Black Lives Matter, or, you know, sitting here speaking out about your experience as a Black person? Would you have ever done that before summer 2020?
No. Well, wait. When Black Lives Matter came about, the organization, the phrase, the saying, I was hardcore about it. I was on Facebook. I was constantly, whenever it was going, Black Lives Matter. I was sharing this stuff. I did pull back a little bit because I was like, okay, maybe, I mean, yeah, I have privacy settings on my Facebook page, but people can still screenshot you. I definitely didn't want to turn people away, but at the same time, like, I want you to know what it is. Prior to this, I guess, social revolution, I wasn't that big on Twitter as much. So I guess, yes and no, I would have tweeted and talked about Black Lives Matter. But on Facebook, my old Facebook stuff, woo, some stuff that is just like, this kid was wild.
Right.
I'm a little political about, like try to be politically correct. Because I'm like, Black Lives Matter because my life matters. Like, I need you to see why I'm posting it. Because I do get that there's, I don't know what the Black Lives Matter organization is doing. I have no clue. Because I'm a local news journalist, that ain't my fight. But can I agree with their mission? Yes. So if you ever get mad at me because you saw I put a Black Lives Matter cover photo, or even with Me Too, like, if I get that there was some stuff with every movement, but if I say it, can you at least see why I said it before you get mad? So I'm willing to have those arguments because I know that at the end of the day, I'll win. Because if you tell me Black Lives Don't Matter, you're telling me you don't like me. Like, I'm a Black journalist. So I'm willing to have those fights. And I was feisty in college, clearly, because I was posting like I was an activist, and that's still in me. Real deep behind the journalists. So.
I feel like every journalist has some type of activism. I'm sorry, we all have some type of activism behind us, right? Like, when I took my journalism code of ethics class, I was like, wait, I can't, what? Huh? Come again? Right? But I mean, I'm also going to ask you guys this question, because it was a different time before 2020, right? Would you guys even have done an interview like this today before 2020?
I don't know. And the reason I say that, I feel like if we wouldn't have experienced what we experienced in 2020, would we be here right now?
That's fair.
So I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think people cared before we watched George Floyd die, because that's literally what we did. Like, no one can dispute that. The world watched a Black man die on camera, and that changed some things, because we always had these different, we had videos before George Floyd, but it was something about just seeing before the moment and after that the world watched, and it was like, crap. Do y'all always feel like that? So now it's just different. So I couldn't tell you if I would have before. A part of me says I would have. It might not have been as.
Summer 2020, it brought about just a new era, the way that Black journalists operate. Yeah, they're going to be impartial, but they're going to let you know, hey, this is also my personal fight. And you're going to have to deal with it, whether you like it or not. And the clapback has gotten so strong.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Black journalists.
But what's crazy is I don't even understand why we have to argue about things like that. Because during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, if a journalist has dealt with it, they say something, you know? Like, but with Black history or just our Black plight.
Our experience.
They get very angry.
Very angry.
And I don't understand why. Because if I tell you that an officer made me feel uncomfortable intentionally, it wasn't an accident. He just was having a bad day and took that on me. Why does that offend you? I don't understand.
I wanna ask it this way. If I'm having a bad day, or I wanna pose this point, if I'm having a bad day, I can't go on air and be stupid. And let the upstate know I'm having a bad day, because what's gonna happen? I'm getting fired, I'm getting taken off air, I'm getting suspended, I'm getting reprimanded. And then the public is going to be like, yeah, he shouldn't have done that, he was wrong, he was unprofessional, But what if I had a bad day? Are you going to take up for me the way you take up for officers who have bad days? Because I, like, in these streets, people think it is okay to say whatever they want to me just because I'm holding a camera and the microphone.
Another thing I noticed was we had to sit down as journalists ourselves, and I saw a lot of conversation between older journalists, right, and younger journalists. Whenever I have a conversation with my dad, you know, he always goes, you know, you're sitting here complaining about it, but think about the older journalists. And I'm like, they led the way and I'm leading the way for someone else. Yeah. I don't dismiss that, but we had to have a real talk conversation, like, with each other.
I would love to sit down and pick the brain of an older Black journalist, especially in TV, to understand how they dealt with stuff we're dealing with now. Like for me, I have no problems sending my news director an email and laying it out and saying, hey, this is what's wrong. These are the issues I'm having. They need to be addressed. Where do we go from here?
Yeah. I call my mentor when I'm angry and I feel like I'm too angry to have a level-headed conversation. I call my mentor and I'm like, or I give her an SOS, like literally the SOS emoji. I'm having a moment. I might need to run this by you before I say it to anybody else. And normally I give her all the anger and she's like, okay, dial that back, but say exactly what you said. Because what I said made sense. And she was always like that. She stood up for herself and she made it known that she was worth a lot. And I'm still trying to figure out that half of it. Because I normally can convey what makes me angry and why they need to make changes. But I don't know how to necessarily get what I'm worth. And that's the part that's coming in this, I feel, second act of news. Because it's just hard. It's hard to fight those two battles at the same time. Like, I'm not getting paid what I'm worth, but I also need to correct all of this for future Black journalists.
Right. But I mean, I heard you guys made some corrections in your newsroom when it comes to covering the Black community. So tell me a little bit about that, you guys.
Now they are, I'm laughing, Amber, you know what I'm laughing about, the situation where a reporter was told that you need to cover this Black person the way you cover the white person.
Facts.
It's, 2020 has caused management to look at things and the way we cover things. And I'm appreciative of that. Even this month, like last year, year before last, we didn't do anything for Black history. Nothing. Even me as a Black reporter, like I wanted to pitch Black history stories, but I did. But this year, they have stepped it up and said every day we are giving a Black history story. And it's not, what I like about it, it's not just the typical MLK or Rosa Parks, the historical figures that we know and learned about in school. For us, we're focusing on the Black people right here in our communities that led the way, that led the charge, that made a change for our community. So every day we are telling those stories. And I'm so excited about that. And this is something that management led the charge on. Like the Black reporters or other reporters, we didn't have to go to management and say, we need to do this. They came and said, bam, let's do it. Or we are doing it.
And they're good about acknowledging bias in certain reporters. And it's not bad when you have to have that conversation. Because some, I get it. If you were raised in the South, a very non-diverse family at all, like you didn't have any diversity, so you have deep, deep, deep Southern white roots, I get it if you're confused. But now it's time to change that. And not just saying, if there's a white person that's missing, and there's a black person that's missing, you're not going to pitch them both. Or if one goes missing one day and then another goes missing the next and you just act like that one didn't happen, you can't do that because those families deserve to be asked, hey, do you want to do an interview about your loved one?
Hey, everybody. So we're going to take a brief break. And after that, we're going to talk about something that can cause a lot of drama in the newsroom. We're going to be talking about black hair. That's coming up right after the break. Let's move on to something a little bit more humorous. Okay. I think that shocks people the most when I talk about our contracts, right? We get a 2-year contract, that's your standard contract. And if you really read through your contract, you see this little clause that, go ahead, Amber. What's the little clause about?
No, I was gonna let you get to the clause.
You see this little clause where you basically don't really own your looks. Your station does.
And you own yourself. Your whole body.
You do not own your looks. Your station does. And it blows people away, especially people in the black community, because let's be honest, my hair did not look like this last week. Okay. It was down.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to put it up like this, I have to go have that conversation with my news director. And that is not a decision that's made in a day for most people. And Amber, you had that experience, right?
Yeah, and it's so funny because I don't think I read my contract ever until this job. And I've had several.
We were just trying to make it in the
literally. I don't think I ever read my contract. So when I was reading it, I was like, crap, I gotta tell them that I want to change my hair. And I think in the wake of George Floyd, I really was just struggling. And I was like, okay, I don't like my hair. I don't like my weight. I need to do something. So I was like, and I went over this with like friends, family, my parents, like just, should I ask them to get braids? Like I made it, it was this big deal because I know in the past people have said no. This is also my first female news director while I was on air. Because my first news director, I had a boss that was a female, but I haven't had many female bosses. But I still didn't click that it might go a little bit better if I ask. So like I remember it being so dramatic. Like I was like, okay, I'm about to send this text message. Let's see if she says I can get braids. And I had a picture ready for her. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And I just hit send. And like 2 minutes later, not even 2 minutes. It was like so fast. She was like, go for it. And I was like, I done gave myself a heart attack over this decision. And my boss just responded back so sweet. Because she didn't ask any questions. She didn't just put a thumbs up. She's like, go for it. What do you mean? Leave me alone, essentially, like do that. And it made me so happy. And I don't remember if I gave her a time frame for these braids, but they might be here forever. I love them so much.
I'm not mad at it. I'm still mad that, you know, we're at a time where everybody's wearing their vacation braids now. Yeah. And look, I couldn't do that back in the day. I asked to wear my vacation braids. I'm still upset.
You have a right to be upset because it's moments like yours that make me mad. It's like, that's why I was freaking out.
Right.
Every black journalist was nervous.
Right. You
know, I'm just living my best life. And then younger journalists are like, she on TV with braids. And then in the summertime when every little kid got braids, they're going to be like, man, she look like me.
Right.
And that's what matters.
Right. Now, Jarvis, you had a different experience. Which I'm still jealous of yours, but go ahead.
When I decided to grow my hair back in Savannah,
I have so many questions.
I did not ask. I was just like, I'm just gonna go for it. And I mean, obviously, to get to that length, it took like 4 months. But still, I just went through the process, and I. it was just like whatever. My first that was my second market. My first market, I started with just a goatee, but shaving, it got to a point where my face started breaking out and looking very bad with a lot of bumps. So I was like, I'm just gonna have to grow this beard out. Didn't say anything to me at all. And I was like, okay. Like if they would have came to me and said, Jarvis, you cut your hair, I would have given a little pushback, but I would have been like, okay, I respect that. Like, tell me why I need to cut my hair. What is wrong with my hair? It's in its natural state. It's not outrageous. It's neat. It's groomed. Why do I need to cut my hair? But yeah, they didn't say anything. My first news director, when I grew the beard, she didn't say anything. And so, yeah, I love it. Now, every now and then, like twice a year, probably at the beginning of the year and toward the end of the year, I feel the need to cut my beard just so I can see more of my face. And then I get to the point where I'm like, I miss my beard. I always grow it back. So, yeah, that's my life.
It's just interesting that to me that, you know, especially I think this was happening before 2020. Let's keep it honest. There was that one guy who worked for the national ABC network. Right. And he had the dreads. And that was just revolutionary. And I remember like Lindsay Davis did like a story on him and everyone was like, oh, wow. Right. And my mentor at the time that I had to drop from my life, you know which one I'm talking about, Jarvis. All of a sudden, the man who told me not to wear my natural hair on TV is now, he now has dreads.
I forgot about that guy.
He now has dreads. He now has dreads.
We're going to have a conversation after this because I want to know what market he's in.
Oh, yeah, I'll let you know later. But it's just, and you know, I mean, it wasn't just him. There was a lot of other Black reporters who were like, you don't want to get into that battle, right? They would talk about getting hired and that's going to be an issue and stuff like that. That was our own people. So I want people to know it wasn't just the people up top. It was our own. My rebuttal is always, so Susie can come in here fresh out the shower with her hair like
all
smells wet, but I can't wear my natural hair. And I have to tame my natural hair, but like if she's having a messy bun day, it's okay.
So when I was in college, I had dreads. Did I ever show you a picture where I had dreads? Yeah, I had dreads.
And I still can't put the two people together. Bring them back.
I hate that. I literally want to. I hate that I cut my hair. I listen to too many people say, you're not going to be able to get in this industry with dreads. You're going to have a clean shaven face all the time. I will never forget there was one Sunday after church. I went to brunch with a friend. She worked at the university I was at, and one of her friends actually worked in Savannah as an anchor. And I had a goatee at the time because before news, I never wanted to have a beard because I felt like it made me look older. So we were sitting at Cheesecake Factory having brunch, and she's giving me this rundown, and she's rather aggressive, like, yeah, you're gonna have to do this, you're gonna have to cut your hair and clean shaven every day. Like, she had the neck and the head going, and I was sitting there like, okay. I was like, I'm going to keep a goatee. I compromised on the dreads, but I was like, I'm going to keep my goatee. She was like, no. And I was like, okay, whatever. I hate when people say, you can't look this way. You can't do that and work in new. No, you can't. So keep rocking them braids. Don't be surprised if I let this hair get long enough and I come in here with it, some baby, I start it up. Listen.
See, I'm okay with you getting some faux locks. I'm here for it because they got the little extensions that help you grow them out.
Don't encourage you.
He can come in with some shoulder length dreads and I'm going to be all the way here for it.
He's going to do it. He's going to come in with his dreads.
And I'll be like, ooh, his hair grew overnight. But what's so funny is people will probably be like, oh, I'll wear my Crocs now. Like, no, but they'll be like, your hair grew overnight? Oh my God. And I'll be like, yeah, it did, man. It so did. I gave him some serum and it was magical.
Like, there, I have thought about times of regrowing and growing my dreads back. I just hate the ugly stage of it.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, it don't gotta be an ugly stage.
But then go for the pole lock.
Speaking of hair, my a friend and mentor of mine, the station where I interned, she was a reporter. The end of her contract, she had braids, and they were blonde because she had a short haircut. A black girl, light skin complexion, had a nice color that blended with her skin tone. But before she left, she ended up getting braids, and they were blonde. And the news director approved it. And this was in 2013.
Right. So
this movement has been
happening for a while.
It was slower, but now it's like, get into it. Like, my natural hair, the natural state, listen, you're gonna take it.
Right. And I mean, it's so amazing to me. I think it's great that we can, I feel like it helps our reporting that we can fully be ourselves. I think Amber mentioned earlier, you know, kids looking at us and stuff like that and knowing, because, you know, honestly, I will say I didn't pay that. We watched news like every day in our house, right? And I didn't pay that much attention to, you know, what the women were wearing or what their hair looked like. But I did get that sense of you had to be perfection and you had to, and we hear this a lot from, look, no offense to the old school black journalists, but we hear this a lot. We have to be, you know, 20 times better than our white peers, which yes, we should. Our writing should be 20 times better. Our reporting should be 20 times better because we do have something to prove that we belong in this newsroom. But what the fuck does my hair have to do with it? You know?
If anything, you're reflecting your community.
Right.
I will never forget when I cut my hair in Savannah, there was this lady who came up to me. She said, oh my gosh, she's like, I hate that you cut your hair. She's like, I loved it. And in that moment, I was like, oh my God, I probably reminded her of her nephew, her brother, her son, her cousin, somebody. Because that, I mean, at the time, well, still now, that's a style, that's a trend. And it's really embraced by this community.
And it pulls in an audience. You know, I don't know if you guys during sweeps, you guys name your primary audience. Like, I believe in Huntsville, ours was Becky, the suburban soccer mom. But at 11, ours was not Becky. But and I think it was because we had more of us on there, right? And I don't think that we understand that in the news industry, that if you're letting us be ourselves, we're no longer going to go after Susan, you know, the soccer mom. We have, you know, an opportunity to go after, you know, Tatranika.
But it's
so real though, because like I think they underestimate the power of literal black wealth, and it's not even just like the money, it's like the fact that if they put their attention, their time into our channel, our ratings would probably improve.
Right.
And the only way my auntie gonna watch is if she see a little bit of her on there. So like,
you're absolutely right about that. Back home in Birmingham, my mom, this was some years ago, I would never forget her saying, oh, I like to watch such and such channel because they got the black lady on there.
Right. And it's not just black people. It's black people being authentically them. Because let me tell you, I tell Jarvis this story like 1,000 times. When Rodney King, when the riot started, it happened back home. My dad switched to ABC 7. And this was the time when Mark Brown, who is now an anchor, was a reporter. And they're like, Mark, why are people so upset? And he just kept it real honest and was like, well, why do you think?
you know, we watched this on video and these officers, justice wasn't served. That's why they're upset. And ever since then, because he was authentically him, look, my daddy is never going to leave Channel 7. And I know the day.
Well, what's so crazy? This is not just our community that they would win, but it's a lot of white people out here that just look upon black people like we're just this unicorn. Because, you know, like nowhere is diverse enough. So if you put us in the forefront,
right,
you would do so much better for your ratings overall.
Right.
And they don't want to accept that because a lot of them have that subconscious like feeling about us, and they don't realize that we are worth a lot more than you want to say we're worth. But if you try leading your newscast with black people, I guarantee you your ratings would improve.
And that goes back to, oh, go ahead, Jarvis.
I was just saying, I agree 100% with what you just said.
That also goes back to, and this is why, this is where I'm going to become preachy. So just First Lady Hearst. But let me tell you, this is why when I meet a young kid who's like, I want to be a journalist, I'm like, become a producer so you can become the news director, so that you can become the general manager. Because there is not a lot of us. It's growing, but I don't know her name, but I remember there was a news director where they announced in Memphis that she's going to be a news director, and she's a young black woman. And black journalist Twitter, because there's a difference between black Twitter and black journalist Twitter, the NABJ darlings, let's just call them that, were like, rejoice. Look, I love the NABJ. Great resource. But NABJ darlings was like, rejoice, clap, clap for her. And it's like, it's great that she's a news director, but I don't think people understand that when I started in news, I think there was only 3 black news directors. 3. And we got 200 and something markets. And there's 3 of us. So that's why it's like, I always tell them, that's great. You want to be the next Oprah? Hey. Gotcha. But think about producing. Think about, because at the end of the day, producers decide which stories go in the news. At the end of the day, the news directors do the hiring, and they have final say on all the shows, right? And the GMs, that's programming, that's your people, that is your brand as a newsroom. You know, they have more say so.
And I used to say I wanted to go into management, but I let that dream go because journalism is just so hard sometimes. Oh. And now I'm like, maybe I should, you know, because honestly, I also went to go look at this new news director, and I'm like, I remember her. And like, we really do. Like, I can't imagine walking into a newsroom and seeing somebody with natural hair, because she also has faux locks. Like, that just does something to my heart. and I do want that for younger journalists, because it's not just the black journalists that's going to help. It's going to help these privileged white journalists too see a different picture. You know, like, they'll be better humans after being under a black woman.
Yeah.
Having to submit to that authority of a black person, it's going to get a privileged white person in line real quick.
Real quick.
Because if it's a black person who about their business, nah, dog. Listen, what you're not going to do is that.
You can't try them.
It's in line real quick, and you're going to act like you got some sense about yourself.
Right. And I think they would think a little bit more about their storytelling. They would think a lot bit more about their storytelling, because it's like, at the end of the day, when you have that leadership, a leader is supposed to challenge you on how you're telling your story. You know, I might have not loved all my news directors, let's just be honest, didn't have the greatest career, but I will say they always challenged me on how I told a story. And each market is not the same, right? So that's why I just feel like it's so important. I didn't realize how important it was to have a black GM again until I was in the Techno universe, and I was like, oh, oh, okay. You
I've
know,
I had a black GM, so I'm like, I don't even know what that magic.
Oh, I didn't have a black GM. I didn't. Let's make it clear. That GM knew better.
I would love to have, I would love to have a black GM and black man.
Yeah,
that would be magical. I mean, I know they exist. I just don't know where. I know there is a black GM somewhere.
Got I know there's a black GM in Savannah at the.
I think that's it.
The Hearst station.
Yeah.
The news director. I don't know about the news director.
That was so long ago. That was so long ago. But let's wrap this up. Let's have a little bit more fun. So let's go around. I'm gonna start with Jarvis. What is your prediction for Black people in the newsroom moving forward? So this is beyond 2021.
I think that we're gonna start seeing more Black people in the forefront. How long would it take to where it's truly a just well-balanced, diverse field? I don't know, but I think we'll start to see more Black. We're going to start to see more Black journalists fight because our personal life is part of the story. It's just people are going to have to embrace it. When will that happen? I don't know, but I think it'll happen. So that's my prediction.
All right, Amber.
Just more of us feeling like it's even. And I hope that I feel that it's happening at our station faster than I ever imagined. Like, I remember starting and we were the only two Black people on our shift. And there were shifts that didn't have Black people. And then there were shifts that only had one Black person. Now it's like, there will be balance. And that respect level that comes with not only our work in the industry, but just that you don't discount me because I'm Black. You look at me for the years I've been in this business and you weigh that against my counterparts, not anything else. And I think that's slowly happening where you don't see me as that's the Black girl, but no, I've been here 5 years longer than a lot of your other people. So treat me like that. And I think it's coming. I hope.
Well, thank you both for joining me. This was somewhat funny sometimes conversation, but I think this was, you know, a really educational, you just took a screenshot, didn't you? I wasn't ready. And you just took a screenshot, I got to do the smile.
Everybody smile. Let's take another one.
Wait, hold on. Okay.
Wait, let me, I'm just kidding. I like how we all did a pose, though. But
I have to open my eyes. I have a problem. I open my eyes.
Thank you both for taking the time out to have a conversation. Also, just for being honest through this whole conversation, because I know it's tough and new. So I appreciate you both for this time. So thank you, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
For inviting us. I want my next invite.
Hey, that's the show, and thank you again for joining us for another episode of Before You Pop Off. And make sure to follow the show on Spotify, share it with your friends, your family, your loved ones, and also make sure to follow the show on Instagram, Before You Pop Off. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you next week.